Continuing now with the explanation of the Rashi to the Mishnah on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph. Okay, so as we said before, what had happened to the mincha? The mincha, after all, remember, after they took it out of the basket, right, they put it into a kli shoreis. In other words, one of the vessels which is dedicated to the service of the sanctuary. So since it's already been dedicated or hallowed, if you wish, right, in the kli shoreis, so in that case, you can't simply throw it away. What do you have to do? So it has to be nispafis basal. It has to be burnt, okay? Then he nispazeris, and then they take the ashes of it and they scatter it. Hein in nispafis, and in other words, the same, they just burn completely. And to the Omar the Communist, he said, we're going to say a little further on, he says, the Elushim in Tosehim nispafis. And here is a case where the various pinochos are burnt out of them. Offered up on the Kochoshev Lahor, Baomeris, Inishasa. And there in the list, one of them is where the woman says, Inishasa, I refuse to drink. Alright, then we say, V'yei Megillasor Kishera Lahashkis Boset Acheris, right? That the scroll which has been written in order, to test her and for the Maimam Orarim and so on, it cannot be used in order to give to another Sota. The Be'inon, as we need, Kasiva Lishma, the writing of the scroll has to be for her sake. Yichsiv, as the Pasuk says, the Yosala HaKohen, right, the Kohen shall do unto her, and we interpret law Lishma, as we do in the case of a get. Now, of course, this is the din. We're going to learn that there are differences of opinion, however, whether this is the case or not, okay? But nevertheless, the din would probably follow the, it undoubtedly will follow the Mishnah, okay, in spite of the arguments that are going to be made subsequently against it, okay? Hamayim nishpachim, the water has to be poured away, right? Kevon the Omro Tameya Adni, because the minute that she says, I am unclean, in other words, I am defiled, she's admitting, in other words, that she's committed adultery, then in that case we say biduk of your medicine. In other words, it means that it's like being already passed, tested, and she failed the test, so to speak, okay? Well, mayim hamorim lo nitnu, and why are we requiring her to drink this bitter water? The answer is, elo lebarer es hasofek, it's only in order to resolve the doubt as to whether she was or she wasn't guilty. Then we said that if everything has already been obliterated, right, and at that point she says, Eini shoso, I don't want to drink. She didn't say to me, Ani, but she said, Eini shoso, I'm not going to drink it. In that case, ma'ararin oso, right, we force her to drink. The dilma, because maybe tahorahi, she actually is innocent. Umachmas resisuso kalmra. And it was only because of her fear, her anxiety, she trembled, that she said she doesn't want to drink. And then the Mishnah continues and says, and if Takashi is guilty, so immediately what's going to happen? Her face is going to get green, right? Unehemorikos, and what else? Unehemorikos, her eyes will bulge, and then it says, and also we see her poneho, that her face, Miss Malay's Gidin. Now, obviously, Miss Malay's Gidin means our Gidin Shebalacha Yeha. It means, in other words, the veins in her cheeks, Nopim, they swell. The Neros Kimlea Gidin. It looks as though she's just full of these swollen veins, swollen arteries, whatever it is. The Gambasarana says, Shito Shito, Shel Nefecha. And her body too, the flesh, also becomes like swollen. The Hochi Tanya B'Sifrei, and this is what we learn in the Sifrei, Kemin Shavitin Mizurokinbo, says, if they were like sticks that were thrown at her, in other words, she bruises and so she swells, from this. But what is the Sifrei? Of course, the Sifrei is the Medrash, Halacha that we find for
Bamidbar and Devarim. Okay. Then, what do they say? They say Hotziyuha, right? Take her out. Why? Shelo tetameha azora. So, where actually was she being tested? She was at the Shaare Nikanor, right? At the gates of the Nikanor. Oh, Esras Noshim, or in the Esras Noshim, you know, the court of the women. She takes a derashon that she should leave there for the Kamei Porich, and afterwards the question is going to be asked as follows. We learned in another place it says that the gates of the Kana had not been sanctified. The culture came Esras Noshim, right? And all the more so the Esras Noshim. See, the gates of the Kanar, they separated the Esras Noshim from the Azora, you know, from the main Azora, all right, from the main courtyard, in which, of course, one of the things that you have is the Mizbeach over there, okay? Remember, some time ago, I showed you a plan, a diagram of the Beis HaMikdash. And we saw that there were various courtyards over there, as well as, of course, all the various chambers on the side, three sides of the Beis HaMikdash, and you know which way the where was the Kodesh Kodoshim, and which way did the Mizbeach face, and so on and so forth. Okay, so we learned at that time, you know, that after you come in, you know, into the temple itself, so one of the earliest courtyards that you go to is the Esras Noshim, and then you have steps that lead up into the main Azora, and then of course from the main Azora, needless to say, you know, you have the Kodesh Kodoshim, which is separated from it, but within the Azora itself, within the main Azora, you have actually even there it's divided into two. One of them is called Machdei Leviya, if you wish, because it corresponds to the fact that during the time when Israel wandered in the wilderness, right, and they had the tabernacle with them, so you actually had, you had Shalosh Machnos, right, you had Machdei Yisrael, this is where all the tribes were gathered, then you had Machdei Leviya, where the Levites were, that of course was getting closer to where the Aron HaKodesh and the Yohel Moed were, and then where the, you know, the Yohel Moed and the you know, that was already, you know, Kodesh Kodoshim, and this would be only permitted to Kohanim. Nobody else is permitted in that area over there. So with the Beis HaMikdash too, they had various areas where you had the women could be in one area, the average Israel could be in another area for the Levim, and finally, you know, the area closest to the Mizbeach and everything else where only Kohanim were permitted to be over there. And because if you remember, in several places in the Torah it says, the Zor HaKorev Yumos. In other words, that if a person who is not a Kohen approaches the, let's say, the Mizbeach, then in that case, he will have Misa B'dei Shemayim. It doesn't mean that he's going to be put to death, but it means that he will have Misa B'dei Shemayim. So, therefore, the first one, the Esras Noshim and the Shaare Nikanor, they were not at the same level of holiness as you approached within the inner courts of the Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore, the question that is going to be raised subsequently in discussing this is the fact that Lonis Kachim, a culture in Noshim, and says, Umeis Mutar Likoneis Tamachdin Leviyot. And the question is going to be raised, we see from the wandering of the children of Israel in the desert that what happened, that a dead body was permitted in the Machdei Leviyah. Now how is it going to be proved? So as we're learning the Gemara, and I'm anticipating a little bit, okay, we're going to learn, remember we were learning about what was the great, one of the great merits of Moshe Rabbeinu. They took the bones of Yosef with him, right? And if he took it with him, what was Moshe himself? He was a Levi. So where could he reside? He could reside in the Machdei Leviyah. All right? And yet, at the same time, he had over there the Aron, which contained the bones of Yosef HaTzadik. Okay? So
he
we see that...
But he could also go into the Aron himself.
Right. All right. In that case, he was exceptional. Okay. But it's well, that, you see, that they prove the fact that, after all, if Moshe, who was a Levi, you know, took personal charge of the Atzmos Yosef, then in that particular case, we learn from this that a corpse is permitted even over there. So all the more so then that a corpse. So why then would they say to her, you see, this is the problem. Why would they say, let's get her out of here because, you know, she's liable to die on us or something like that? So that's why they were looking for another explanation in addition. Okay. All right. Then, after that, we learned what? The latter part of the Mishnah deals with the idea that merit. Zechus, right? Tedash eskus tedolah. He says, Tireh, you'll see, he says, V'tilmad, the Parsha Soita, and you'll see that, you know, when you study carefully the Parsha Soita, Shehaskus tela, that there is merit which can suspend punishment for her, even though she may be guilty. The Alpinim, as we learned, it says, V'minikso, V'nizro zara, right? So it says, V'nikso al yedei sechuyosh, how has she been proven innocent? It's because of her merits. Kedei zeriya zera, so that she should be able to have children. And zera, how much time does it take for her to conceive and have a child? So the answer is, tes chodoshim, right? So in other words, one minimum interpretation would say at least nine months suspension, okay? The Yeshomrim, and there are those who say Yoser, even more than that. As we learned in the Mishnah itself, what? It could be a year, could be 2 years, could be 3 years, in the first big Gemara. All right, then of course, the Lamda Tiflis, Rashi doesn't comment over here at this. He says, Beforish big Gemara. Gemara will get around to that, okay. But I've already given you my right. Already told you, I mean, how it's understood, and it's a machlokes as the exact meaning of what the word tiflis is. Okay. Rabbi Yoshua and Meir says, Rotsa Yishmakam for tiflis, Gassinu Megamor Beforish Makamar. It says that this is the reading that we have to accept, and because obviously there may have been a different reading. And the Gemara will explain again what he meant. So as I said, all right. And how about Makas Perushin? What is that? So he says, Meforish mi Gemara. Gemara is going to explain what? Shemake is Atzman Bixolim. He goes and he knocks his cup against the walls, or whatever it is that he knocks, right? Leharos Shehu Ono Bitsanua. In order to show how humble and modest he is. So this is denounced by Rabbi Yeshua as being, you know, a sign of false piety. Okay? All right. Let's learn a little bit of Gemara tonight, and then we'll call it a night, because my voice is getting very tired. All right. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Meir, in the name of Rabbi Meir. What did he say? Okay. So naturally, who is the ultimate person who is being quoted? Rabbi Meir. All right. Rabbi Meir says, "Kishoa yisi lomei Torah etz Rabbi Akiva." When I was studying Torah with Rabbi Akiva, "Oyisi matil kantantom b'tzoch adios." I would take, and we've learned this before, that kantantom is vitriol. In other words, like what is it, like sulfuric acid or something like that, right? And I would mix it into the ink. Now, we learned the ink, remember, is made from gall nuts and other things, you know, and the purpose of the adding the kantantum to it is in order to make it so that it should not easily be obliterated. Okay? So in other words, Rabbi Meir says, I was a sofer. And at the time that I was studying Torah with Rabbi Akiva, so I would add this kantantum into the ink. And he never said anything to me. In other words, he never protested. He didn't say that I was doing wrong. Then, subsequently, I came and I learned with Rabbi Yishmael. And he said to me, Bini ma malachtecha? Son says, what kind of work do you do? So Amarti lo, so I said to him, Liv loradi, I am a scribe. Omali said to me, Bini, my son, he said, Hevei zohir, you should be very careful in what you're doing. Why? Shemalachtecha melecha shemayimi. Because the work that you're doing is work for the sake of heaven. Shema tachsir osachas. Chas v'sholom, you should leave out one letter from the Torah. O tatir osachas. Or tatir over here is really the, like tosir. In other words, or add a letter which doesn't belong over there. Because if you did any of these things, then nimtzei sato machviz kolon kulei. It would be as if you destroyed the entire world, because God knows what the consequences would be. Omarti lo, so I said to him, Davor echod yeshli, tell you, I have something, shani matil sochad yo, right, which I put into the ink, the kan kantom shmo, and it's called kan kantom. Omali, so he said to me, the chi matilim kantantom sochad yo, is it right to put in kan kantom into the ink? A Torah of raw, right? The Torah said, umocho, that what does the Kohen have to do? That is, who's dealing with the sota? Umocho, that, you know, he has to obliterate. So in other words, the Torah's script should be ksav, right? Sheyucha limchos. It has to be a writing which can be obliterated. So, needless to say, it's already it's creating a problem. Why? Because obviously, for Sefer Torah, we do want to have ink that's going to be permanent. And not only for Sefer Torah, but we want the same thing as far as tefillin and mezuzahs are concerned. Okay? But.
Not mezuzahs also?
Yeah, mezuzahs should also.
I thought you can't erase.
I said, it has to be ink that will be permanent.
Well, Sefer Torah you can erase and correct.
Correct, but it's meant to last.
It's meant to
endure. No. This is the point. It's meant
to
endure.
Don't use itself now.
Right.
Okay.
I didn't mean, you know, that it cannot be erased.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when you have to erase. If you see a mistake, that sometimes you do have to make a correction. Okay. God knows I come across them from time to time when I'm laying in years in the toilet.
What do you come across now? Obliteration or the mistake?
Either way.
Which do you see?
You have, there are different problems that occur, okay? One of the most common problems is frankly the fact that ink will fade. Okay? Maybe due to humidity, age, whatever it may be, right?
What's prompting
Yeah, right.
I also see mistakes once in a while.
And then I've caught mistakes.
Areas,
right. I've caught mistakes where a letter was left out.
I've
caught a mistake where a letter was added. I mean, I've caught all kinds of errors in Sefer
Torah. I have seen the Sefer Torah.
Yeah.
Human
absolute
yeah.
kosher. Absolute kosher.
Yeah.
In the center section, a holy ratio.
Yeah.
And then they rewrote it in smaller letters.
Yeah.
The author must have forgotten to write one line.
Right.
So the erased.
Yeah.
9 lines to put in 10 lines.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Well, okay, so
yeah, I've seen all kinds.
You're telling me that they can make a correction in a small area, so you don't have to correct weeks and weeks of work, maybe, you know. So that's
it depends on the nature of the error. If the error is, for example, let's say in God's name, then you have to take out the whole section.
I bet you can.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So at any rate, we see, you know, that he's warning him, right? And, yeah. So he says, Mocha ksav sheyuchal limchos, right? So Maiko Amalei. So the Gemara wants to know, well, what is he telling him? Well, Maiko Mahadalei. And what exactly is he answering him? So Hochi Komalei. This is really what he said to him. He says, Lo mibaye, no question that, what? Bachaseiros v'yaseiros, in other words, if letters are missing or letters, you know, are already, you know, added which don't belong over there, Deboki Anot. Says, I am an expert, says Rabbi Meir. I mean, I know these things. Elo afilu lemeichas lezvuk. But how about the case where even to worry about whether a fly landed during the time that I was writing, the Sefer Torah, landed where? In the ink, right? The Dilma Osi, the Yasiv Atagi de Dallas, maybe he came and he landed on the crown, literally, of the Dalad, right? By the way, Dalad should really be Dallas, okay? As you can see. Okay, we say Dalad. Maybe if we're talking Spardit, I don't know, Dalit, okay, whatever. But, we always think of it as having a Dalad at the end, right? Dalit. But here we see that this is not how they understood it. Okay. This is close, of course, to what? First of all, once upon a time, a Dalit did look like what? Like a door. That's why it was called Dalit. Okay? And secondly, you see in the Greek what happened when they took over the form of it and they gave it a name. So they didn't call it Dalit, but they called it Delta, you see. So you can see that this is closer to it. Okay? So maybe the fly would come and sit on this crown of the Dalit, umochiklei, and erase it, umeshavalei, and turn it into what? A resh. So he says, I'm very, very careful to make sure that no accident like this would happen. And of course we know, what is the problem with the Dalit and the resh? One of the outstanding examples is the fact that when we say Shema Yisrael, right? We say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? And if you'll take a look at the Torah, and sometimes it's reproduced in Siddurim as well, the Dalet of Echad is a big Dalet. All right. We have another pasuk where it's written Lo Tishtachaveh Le'el Acher. You should not bow down to another god. Okay? And there, what do we find? That the resh is written big. Now, naturally, chatz v'sholem, it should be mixed up. If we would read the second one, is echad, or the first one is acher, God forbid the world would be destroyed, you see. This is what he's saying, that I'm very, very careful with these to make sure that something like this shouldn't happen, and to reassure his teacher that, the work that he's doing, which is work l'shem shemayim, for the sake of heaven, will not destroy the world, okay, by giving a false interpretation to what the Torah is teaching us. Okay. So, what does Rabbi Meir say to him? He says to him, Dover Echod, he says, Yeshli. He says, I have something, he says, Sha'ani Mati L'Sochad Yo, that I put into the ink, the Kan Kantom Shemo. Right? And it's called Kantantom. So, teacher says, 80? Yeah? Isn't it so? So, Veho Tanya, or probably Veho Tanan, all right, we learned in another place that Omar Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir said, Kisho Yisi Lome Tere Esther Rabbi Yishwerel, or Yisi Matil Kantantom and Sochatio, Velo Amali Dabar. Keshebosi Eisel Rabbi Akiva Asoro Alai. Punkt verkehrt, if you'll take a look. Alright? Just before we said, who did he study with first? Rabbi Akiva, right? And he said, Rabbi Akiva didn't say anything to him when he told him, that he used to come to Hanfam, right? But when he came to Rabbi Yishmael, then Rabbi Yishmael questioned the fact that he's putting in Kan Kantom. Okay? Now, this other statement, happens to be a Gemara in Erevin, okay, quotes him as, where did he go to learn Torah first? To Rabbi Yishmael, right? And he said, that he put Kantom in it, and Rabbi Yishmael didn't say anything to him, right? The previous statement said, right, okay, you follow me, right? Punkt verkehrt, right? And when he came to Rabbi Akiva, he says, Asara, he forbade me, right, to do so, to add the Kantom. So the Gemara says, first of all, Kasha Shibish HaShibish, and Kasha Asara says, it's a Kasha, first of all, as who was he apprenticed to learning Torah first, right? Because in one case it says that he went to Rabbi Akiva, in the second case it says he went first to Rabbi Yishmael. And the second problem is, who said the kankantum shouldn't be used? So the Gemara says, Bishlamo Shimush HaShimush, when it comes to the question as who did he learn Torah with, right? This is not a kasha. Meikora, to begin with, also the Kabi the Rabbi Akiva. Came first to Rabbi Akiva in order to learn Torah from him. Kaven de Lemotzi, right? Kom Alibe. So when he discovered that Skletzichnish to his heart, whatever it may be, in other words, he felt that he wasn't making any progress enough learning with Rabbi Akiva. He couldn't really understand exactly what Rabbi Akiva was driving at. So also the coming to Rabbi Yishmael, so he came to Rabbi Yishmael. Part of the reason may be, you see, in other places of the Gemara, we find that Rabbi Akiva, for example, is Doresh Essen. In other words, the word S, he would find an explanation. Why does it say S? I mean, normally we would say that S is what? It's used, this is the nature of the Hebrew language, that if you have a direct, definite object, you use S in front of it, okay? But Rabbi Akiva would always try to find a reason why is the word S over there. Rabbi Yishmael, on the other hand, said, look, this is the nature of the language, and I'm going to be, and it's very rare that Rabbi Yishmael would try to find a special drash for the word S. So maybe, I mean, this is my opinion, that it could be that the difficulty that he had, he didn't understand Rabbi Akiva's system of finding a drash here, there, and every place else, and so on. And, you know, maybe he felt that with Rabbi Yishmael he would learn pshat, as we would say, okay? You know, in more modern terms, it's the difference between what we would call pilpul versus pshat. Pshat means you try to find what is ultimately the plain and simple meaning of what the text says. And pilpul means that you give adreya hin, adreya her, and so on. You see, this is pilpul. So it's fine for advanced students, you know, that pilpul. But before you can actually get into pilpul, you have to first understand pshat too, you see. So that may be the reason why he said, you know, that first he went to learn with Rabbi Akiva, but couldn't quite grasp what Rabbi Akiva was doing, so therefore he came to Rabbi Yishmael, the Gemara, and then he learned, you know, Torah, in other words, what does this say, what is that from him? And then Hodor also becoming Rabbi Akiva. And then he came back again to learn with Rabbi Akiva, and with Akiva, Sovar Sibora, right? There he was able to use already, you see, having had experience first with Rabbi Akiva and then with Rabbi Yishmael, and then having a good grounding with both, then he was able already at this point to be able to reason out Torah, you know, by virtue of his own ability to reason. This is what we mean by Sbora, okay? Elo, but Asara Asara Kasha says, who forbade the use of the kankantum? So, Zakasha. Tanya, we learned what Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, so this is a different one, who now gets involved, right? Rabbi Yehuda. He says, Omer hoy Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir used to say, Lakol Martilin Kankantum Matoch Hadyo, that everywhere in the Torah they put in kankantum into the ink, as we said before, in order to keep the writing that it shouldn't get become obliterated easily. Chutz Parsha Sota, except for Parsha Sota. Now the meaning of this would mean, according to Rashi, that all the other passages that they wrote in the Torah, they wrote with kankantum, right? But when it came to writing the Parsha Sota in the Torah, they wrote, he did not add the kankantum. Why? Because this might be obliterated. This would seem to be the meaning. Rabbi Yaakov over there, Mishmo, but Rabbi Yaakov said in his name, chutz b'parsha Soto shel Mikdash, except for the parsha of Soto that they used in the Beis Hamikdash, which would mean what? Which would mean that everywhere in the Torah you have to use kan kanton, including the parsha Soto in the Torah. But if you're writing the Megillah in the Beis Hamikdash, in other words, for, you know, in order to give, you know, to obliterate, so then in that case you don't use kan kanton.
I would say the Torah is wrote in the Mikdash.
That was written with kan kanton. Okay. At least we have to think so. Okay. All right. Anyway, I think we'll stop at this point at the top of Daf Chof Omid Beis and continue from over here next week. Yotzeh Hashem. Okay. Okay. So, of the day. I'm getting the hang of this machine. Tonight is the 25th, I believe, of November. And it also happens to be now already it's dark, so it's Chavav Cheshvan. We are now on, again, as we mentioned a few moments ago, on the top of Daf Chof Omud Beis, beginning with the third line. Remember again that the subject at the moment is about whether it is permitted to write a Sefer Torah using Kan Kantom or not, and of course the answer is yes, definitely it should be used, because we want to have the ink permanent. As for the opinion that says, you know, that except for Parsha Soto, this is a minority opinion, of course it's not the accepted halacha. However, as Rabbi Yaakov pointed out, in the Beis HaMikdash, there, when they were writing the, you know, the little portion that they have to write for the Sota, and which has to be obliterated, then obviously there they're not going to use Kan Kanton, because they want to make it possible to obliterate without any difficulty. So this is where we are right now. So,
it has to be obliterated?
Yes. The procedure that we find in Parsha Sota is as follows. That the woman who is suspected of adultery by her husband, and she's gone through everything, examination by the Beis Din, and being questioned by the priest who is officiating, and being urged to confess and stop the whole business if indeed, I mean, she was guilty of having committed adultery, but otherwise to go ahead with it, you know, if she is innocent and she wants to prove her innocence, you understand?
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things that she has to do, besides some of the other things that we've already mentioned in the course of a study, as for example the fact that the Kohen has to dishevel her hair and rip the upper part of her garment and so on and so forth, and then he has to have to he has to make her take an oath saying, you know, that if she is innocent, and of course the curses will not take effect, but if she is guilty, then the curses contained in the scroll which she has to write will take effect. And of course, you know, the curses mean, you know, that her belly will swell, and her thighs will fall, and so on and so forth. And in other words, we'll see too that the Mishnah mentions another thing that we had at the end of last week's lesson that we'll reiterate tonight, namely that her face turns green and everything else happens to her, you know, if she is guilty, right? But part of it consists of taking this scroll upon which the curses were written and dipping it in the Mayim Chaim, in other words, the water which comes from the big basin that they had in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kior, as they called it, and the writing has to be completely obliterated, and that includes even the mention of God's name that we find over there. Normally you're not allowed to erase God's name, but this was the one exception where it is permitted to obliterate the name of God, because in the final analysis the idea is in order to try to keep harmony between husband and wife. This is the basic idea behind it. Okay. So obviously, if the Megillah, as it's called over here, you know, this scroll of parchment upon which they write this passage from the Torah. If it were written with permanent ink, it will make it much more difficult in order to try to obliterate it, because the words must be obliterated, added to the water, and then we learn subsequently also that a little bitter substance is added to the water so that the water should be my
like a written scroll and they
right right of course I don't it doesn't mean that they take a great big scroll but they do take and the Kohen has to write it and then he has to obliterate it. Also she has to bring a mincha, which means a meal offering, and this differs from all the other meal offerings that are mentioned in the Torah, or practically from all the others. Most of the other meal offerings come out of fine flour, fine wheat flour. This is made out of barley, and it's ordinary barley flour. And the others, we learned that when they are offered up, they have to be added with, you add olive oil to it, and you also add frankincense, and the frankincense then is going to be removed by the Kohen and placed on the altar together with what we call the kometz. In other words, he takes a handful of the flour and burns it on the altar, and the rest, we learned, is going to be eaten by the Kohanim. But we also had a discussion in the Torah as to whether the offering of the mincha precedes the business with her drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim, you know, these waters literally of curse, or the bitter waters, or does it come after? And there is the difference of opinion concerning that, but as we'll see, the Torah itself happens to mention that the mincha is first given, and then after that, there's the other procedure. Okay. All right. So, question is, my benayo, what is the reason why we have a difference of opinion concerning the use of the kankantom? Difference of opinion between the various authorities who were mentioned at the bottom of the previous page. Namely, Rabbi Akiva is one of them, Rabbi Hood is another one, Rabbi Meir is another one. Okay. So, my benayo. So Omar Rabbi Yumiya says the reason is Nimchoklo min HaTorah ikabinayu. The question that has to be resolved among them is whether when they erase the writing from the scroll, does it have to be specially for her or not? As Rashi says, Limchok lo, but there mit Parsha Soto Shebesefer HaTorah. Rashi says that the question is not about the individual scroll that they write, you know, for the actual thing, but the question is about what about this portion within the Torah itself? Can it be written so that it can be obliterated or not? So this is how we understand. So according to the first opinion that was mentioned, it would be that when you write a Sefer Torah, then that portion is not written with kankantom. That's one opinion, and along comes Rabbi Yaakov, who was the last one mentioned over here on the top of the page, to say that even that must be written with kankantom. Okay? And the only, in other words, with this vitriol, which will keep it as a permanent thing.
Why would you never want to obliterate the writing in the actual Torah? That's not using the Sefer.
You're absolutely right, and it doesn't really make that much sense, but it may be that what they had in mind is that you would take a section out of the Torah, maybe cut it out and then use it as something like that. It may be that this is what they had in mind, you see, so that in that particular case you have to be prepared for the emergency situation.
They write one Lishma?
Huh?
They write it out Lishma?
Yeah, right. Well, this is another question. Obviously, it should really be written Lishma. It should be. But that's going to be disputed also. Okay? So, as we go along, we'll see the answer to your question, Marty. Okay? All right. So, this is the way it stands right now. So, in other words, there's a difference of opinion as to whether even this portion within the Torah itself can be written with permanent ink or with not permanent ink, right? And according to Rabbi Yaakov, it has to be written with permanent ink. Okay. So, the Gemara says, Vahadei Tanoi, these, authorities, these authorities of the Mishnah, in their disagreement, Kehanei Tanoi, are they similar to other authorities in the Mishnah who also had a difference of opinion? The Tanya, as we've learned, it's written, Ein Megillaso Kesheiro Lahashkis Bo Sota Acheres. Okay? Which means that the scroll which is written for this woman, the Sota, cannot be used in order to give it to another woman. Okay? Which would mean what? Yeah, it has to be Lishma. Okay? In other words, if we write it for this woman, and then let's say she decides not to go ahead with it. I mean, she says, I'm not going to drink anymore. Okay? I refuse to do it. And this was before the final stage, you know, in the whole process. At any point, the process could have been interrupted by her saying that I don't want to drink. Or to Mayadi, I really am defiled, in other words, it's the confession that she has committed adultery, and then she wouldn't have to drink to my memorial. So you cannot, let's say, if the scroll has already been written for her, you understand, and then she changes her mind and she says I'm not going through with it for whatever reason, so you can put it aside and say okay, so we'll use it for another woman.
Have some of the laws of
get in it? It's similar in this respect to the law concerning a get, because again, in the case of a get, there the Torah is very specific that it says the course of law. He has to write for her, the words, the get civic
resource.
Yes.
What's written in the subject process? I mean, her name isn't on it.
No. That's a big difference, by the way. That is a big difference. You're absolutely right in your observation. That, the Megillah of the Sota simply contains certain verses taken from the Pasha. That this was a difference of opinion between authorities that we learned at an earlier period as to whether they only put down what they call the olos, in other words, the curses, or whether they put down everything, including the instructions that the Kohen is to do this, the Kohen is to say that, and so on and so forth. Presumably, the Kohen actually, the halacha would be that they have to write the whole section, okay, including instructions to the Kohen. But you're absolutely right, there is no name mentioned in there, whereas in a get it's a different story. You have to have the name of the woman to whom it's being given, where it is given, what date it has to be written, and so on and so forth and so on. So that that's a big difference between them. So that when the Torah says for chos of law, the sefer krisus, right, with a get, it's very specific, and you cannot do it. But we'll see.
Here you might right. think that you can do it, so you can.
Exactly, exactly. So this is the reason why there's a difference of opinion, that, one authority says, ein megillah so kesera hashkis kosota, right, that what he wrote, and for this particular woman cannot be used in order to give it to another sota, right, that's an opinion. And the other opinion says Rabbi Achi bar Yoshiya Megillah so kasher lahashkis bo sota acheres. According to him, since there is no name or anything like that, so that if it wasn't used in case A, so you could save it and use it in case B. Omer Rab Papa. So our Papa says, Dilma Lohi, maybe this is not the point of the discussion. He says, At kan leko ama tanakana hason elokeven the intik lishum rochel lohadam intik or lishum leya. He says, there, in the case where it says, it may... you have to be careful as to who you write it for. He says, inasmuch as the intik In other words, it has been inscribed Lishum Rachel in the name of Rachel, or for Rachel, right? So Lo Hadram Mintiko, then you cannot then put it to use Lishum Leah, for Leah. Even though, as we said, there is no name. About Torah, but how about the Torah scroll itself? The Stama Ksiva, which is written, shall we say, like anonymously. In other words, there are no names or anything. Like when you write a Sefer Torah, you're writing a Sefer Torah, you know. So are we going to say, Hochinami Demachkinon? Are we to say that Torah is going to be written so that we can erase this section? As the first, authority who said to Rabbi Meir, you know, that in this particular section, you don't use kantom, right? You don't use the permanent ink. So Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzhak, Dim Elohim, says maybe that's not the point of the discussion. At kan loika Amar Rabbi Achi bar Yoshiyav, Hasam Elabim Mikilo Dichlishum Olos Ba'olam. Says maybe when Rabbi Achi ben Yoshio, who was the man who said that you could use it for a different sota in case it hasn't been used for the one for whom it was originally written, so he says maybe the reason over there, because what is written in passage that has been prepared for the sota, the answer is only the curses. Well, okay, but the curses are written anonymously. There's no name over there. So that's why maybe Rabbi Achi bar Yoshiya says that in that case, so if it hasn't been used for one, you can use it for another. Aval Torah. But when it comes to Torah, the Islamid Kesiva Hochinami, Elimachkina. But when it comes to a Sefer Torah, which has to be used in order to learn, we have to study Torah and so on, so we need a Torah, you know, that's not going to be erased, right? So in this particular case, then we're not allowed to erase a section of the Torah itself. So they question Rabbi Achi bar Yoshiya Leisle Kosav Legorish Ishto Nimlach Mitzoy Ben. Okay, let's take it phrase by phrase. It says, tell me, doesn't Rabbi Achi bar Yoshiya also agree when it comes to the question of a get? That Kosav Legorish Ishto, a man wrote a get in order to divorce his wife, right? Then Nimlach, and then he reconsidered, in other words, he decided not to go ahead, he wants to keep the wife after all. So Mitzoy Ben Iro, so somebody who lives in the same town said, found him and said him, the Omalei, he says, you know what? He says, Shemi Kishimcha, my name is the same as your name. Mishem Ishti Kishem Ishtacha, and my wife's name is also the same as your wife's name. So in other words, why can't I take, I have a ready-made get, I'll be happy to use it. So, of course, what did Chazal say? They say, it's posel legarishbo, right? It is invalid. This is they cannot be used in order to divorce with this particular document. So, in that case, we have to say that Achi ben Yoshiya is not going to disagree with it. So the question is, why does he disagree then in the case of the section which is written for the sota, right? So Amrei Hosom, in the case of the get, the Chosav lo Omer Rachmonon. The Torah says that he is to write for her, right? In other words, for her sake. Intended for her. Be'inon kesiva lishma, which these words mean that we require that it has to be written for her only. But Hachinami, why can't we say over here in the case of the Megillah of Sota, right, that what? The Torah says over here in Parsha Sota, the Osa Lo, he is to do unto her, right? So, again, what do we see? We see that the word law is also used, correct? But the point is, what is the meaning of the Osa? So he says, Asiyo, right? He says, my Asiyo, what do we mean by the word, you know, he's to do? Are we referring to the fact of the writing? He says no, referring only to what? To mechika. In other words, the obliterating, you know, the erasing of the writing on the scroll. So, even though he says, in other words, that it could be reused, although of course it's contrary to the accepted halacha, right? But we're trying to explain his point of view. So we would say that in the case of a get, there's no question that he also agrees that it has to be law lishmo, as we say, right? And in the case of the sota, what does it mean, law? The law does not refer to writing it, but the law only refers to what? To the obliterating. So, pardon me? Oh, the Oso law is called the Vrei HaTorah Azosa. In other words, that he is to do what the, you know, whatever the Torah commands in this particular case. But what is the Torah commanding? It's commanding, you know, that the scroll be obliterated into the Bayim HaMa'orim, and then she has to drink it. Okay. So, in other words, according to him, it's not the writing of the scroll that the Torah says, you know, has to be law, but it is the obliterating. But as I say, this is his opinion. It's not the opinion, you know, the majority opinion, which is say that you cannot reuse. You know, if you didn't use a Parsha Sota, then in that case, you cannot go ahead and use it for another one. So we take a look at the Mishnah again on the preceding page. Where it's first of all right, okay. Yeah, well, that doesn't quite say that. But if you remember, it says Achalai Nimchaka Megillah, before the Megillah has been erased, is what the Mishnah says. And Omra Enisher said, at that point she says, I refuse to drink to buy Mamorim. Then in that case, what does it say over there? Megillah so Nignesis, that the scroll has to be buried, it cannot be used. Okay? Minchosam is Pazeris, Aladeshin, and also the meal offering that she brought, this has to be burned, where they burn, so to speak, like the refuse of the Kabbadis instead of burning on the altar. Okay?
Doesn't it seem that
that's
a very important part of allowing her to wait through that whole process while he's doing the writing?
Yeah.
Gives her all that extra time to change her mind.
Oh, yes, no question. Just as we had all along, you know, there are all kinds of stages, and at any stage she has the right to say that I don't want.
Right, so if they're going to use them as love of somebody else,
right.
that takes away from her that extra time.
Yeah.
That
but and then yes, and then the Mishnah said over there, right, that you know that the Amigal Tzok Shel Ashkes Bo Seta Acheres, right? And so, yeah. Oh, okay. So in general, it should be buried. Okay, what's this over here? Rabbi Michael J. Brady, Thanksgiving secular or religious holiday? Okay. Okay, we shall read it.
I went over to your house, but you weren't there.
Oh, obviously I was here.
No, not now. Earlier, I didn't go now. I went to your house earlier.
Oh.
This afternoon?
Well, okay. Maybe when I was in shul. Who knows? I don't know. Okay. All right. Now, the Mishnah then continues, which says, "Einon aspekel teshtei satsh paneha marikos," and so on and so forth. It means that, you know, she's drunk she drank the mayim hamaorim, right? And if she's guilty, then she'd hardly finished drinking it when her face turns green, and her veins stand out and arise, they jut out and things like that. In other words, you know, the curses are beginning to take affected her, right? So money. Who is the person who holds this opinion? This is Rav Shimon. It's Rav Shimon's opinion. The Omar, who says, Makris bin Chasa, right, that first they offer up the meal offering, the Achakach Mashke, and after that, then the priest causes her to drink. All right. The Chamod alei Korvo min Chasa, as long as the meal offering has not been offered up yet, then Lo Batkele Maya, then the water has no effect, it cannot do any testing, so to speak. Dichsiv, as it is written, Mincha Zikaron, that the Mincha is there as a memorial, and the Masker as Avon, it's a reminder of sin. So in other words, the Mincha precedes, and then comes the drinking. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, okay?
How is the Mincha a reminder of sin?
Okay, correct.
Even though this was a very crude Mincha.
That's right, but that's the point. It was a crude mincha. Instead of being finest flour, you know, finest wheat flour mixed with oil and with frankincense and so on and so forth, this, and also, you know, offered in the finest vessels, you understand? This is brought in a basket made out of wicker, and only then first transferred into a kli shoris, you know, into one of the sanctified vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. The whole thing is in order to show that this doesn't have the same rank, the same standing, shall we say, as you know, a mincha which is there in order to fulfill what a mincha is supposed to do.
But
yeah.
Why did the mincha have to be offered at all as part of the process?
And the Torah says so. Oh, that's already the Torah says so. Yeah. And it's called minchas kenos, which means the mincha of jealousy. Now, jealousy is the term that they use in order to indicate the fact that the husband suspects his wife, he's warned her, etc., etc., and, you know, she disobeyed, and therefore he suspects, you know, that she has committed adultery.
What place would they do this ritual?
In the Beis HaMikdash.
Just in nowhere else, just there?
Yeah, right, right. Oh, absolutely. There was a whole procedure that we learned. First, he goes to the local Beis Din, and if the local Beis Din determines the fact that there are grounds for him to suspect his wife, that he gave her adequate warning, that witnesses were there in order to observe, you know, that she defied, you know, the warning that he gave her, that she's not to be secluded with this man. Because that's the thing. I mean, to simply meet him in the street and say hello to him, this doesn't constitute anything, you understand? But, you know, that she actually was secluded with him in spite of the fact that the husband already warned her against this with this particular person. So then, in that particular case, the local Beis Din has to appoint two Talmidei Chachamim to accompany both husband and wife to Yerushalayim, and there again in the Beis HaMikdash they're brought before the main court, and they have to again examine the facts and everything else, and if they're satisfied that there are grounds, but at the same time that the woman wants to establish her innocence, then in that case then they start in, you know, with the business with the mincha and the preparation of the water and the writing of the Megillah. And at any point in the procedure, if she wants to stop it, she can stop it.
At any point, I thought after it's dissolved in the water,
that's the one thing. Right. Once, so they've gone through everything. The mincha has been offered and the water is dissolved. And in that case, and it depends what she says. If she says, Tameya ani, in other words, I admit, you know, that I have been defiled, then in that case, that's it. Because we say, as Rabbi Akiva said over there, what is the purpose of the water? She's beduka. She's already her own, right? She's admitted it, and that's the same as testing it, you see. But if she said, Eini shosa, I'm not going to drink it, so then we have to determine what is the reason why she says that. If we decide that it is because it's a, you know, it's an admission of guilt on her part, then in that case, we stop the procedure. But if it is because she's terrified of the process, but at the same time she is innocent, then in that particular case, even if she doesn't want to go ahead with it, then they would cause her to drink the water, because they want to establish her innocence also through the means of this test.
Death penalty?
Huh?
Death penalty for that?
No.
No?
No, there's no death penalty for her. Because...
Well, but the death penalty is a result of drinking the water if she's guilty.
Oh, okay. That would be right. Now, when would it take effect, and so on? According to one opinion, it would take effect immediately. But then, as the Mishnah continued on the previous page, we saw that we have the business of schus tola, which means that if the woman has merit, then in that case, it will suspend it. And the question is then, how long would it suspend? You know, the taking of effect. And there are differences of opinion concerning that. So that it's not, you know, that clear cut.
Is there any place where they ever say that somebody actually saw this happen?
You mean how many times does it actually take place?
No, yeah. Somebody has seen somebody drink the water and all these strange things happen?
Well, that would be hard for me to answer. Because presumably there may have been cases. They're not enumerated. The Gemara in Brochus, for example, speaks about Hannah. That, you know, she was childless. She went to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan and Shiloh, right, to pray, to have a child, and so on. And at one point she decided, you know what, maybe I'll say that I have been unfaithful to my husband or something like that, or let my husband suspect me of it, and you know, then I'll drink the Yibayim Hamorarim, and because since I'm innocent, then it's written, you know, v'nixo v'nizro zara, you know, that she being innocent, she will then be blessed with a child. So that way I'll do it. But essentially she didn't have to go through that, Baruch Hashem. But it occurred to her. We do know that there is a Mishnah that mentions that Queen Helena gave a gift to the Beis HaMikdash of a golden tablet upon which was written the Parsha Sota, so that if the Kohen wanted to write the Megillah, you know, for a Sota, then in that case he had a text in front of him, and he could use that as the text. But we don't know, you know, it's not mentioned how many people did it or and so on. I have to assume that there must have been some time or other when, it took place. But there were no statistics on it.
There is a statement that there was never a Ben Sarah
Mora. No, right. I know. So with the Ben Sarah Mora, correct. You do have that. Or with the Yir Hadidachas. That's another one, right. The Yir Hadidachas. With the entire city. It's filled with idolaters and so on, right? They turn to idolatry, okay?
But they don't say that with Sota.
No, they don't say it with Sota. So, I have to assume that there may have been occasional cases. But obviously, I don't think that, that they had a great procession of Sotas lined up, you know, everyone waiting in order to do it, because it was a degrading experience, there's no question about it. And in the final analysis, too, I mean, basically the idea was supposed to be in order to encourage shalom bayis, in order to encourage, you know, love between husband and wife. And as I mentioned several times already, that once the men themselves were guilty of playing around and fooling around, so in that particular case, the whole idea of the drinking, the bayim hamorim, it was abolished, this whole ceremony of the sota. Because they said, you know, that the men were not worthy of doing it.
We're saying,
yeah. This was also the later days of the Second Temple. It was already abolished. Yeah.
Maybe she was going to be in the course of the face of Yiddish. Miracles were yielded. So I guess it didn't matter whether or not the Yiddish wanted to be hidden. So in a case like this, where a woman would be punished immediately and drinking the water and so forth,
yeah.
It would be an open miracle.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, we're not living in a generation where we see these miracles happening all the time. Who knows? Maybe someday we'll be worthy for it, right?
Pray for every day.
Yes, right. Okay, so to get on over here, all right. So Rabbi Shimon says specifically that you have to have the offering up of the mincha first, and then the and then after that you give her the water to drink. So they say, Amos sefer yesh lo zechus. But what about, as when it says further on in the Mishnah, that if she has merit, hoyesa tolilo, right, then it would serve for her in order to suspend, at least temporarily, you know, the effects of drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim. So they say, Esen l'Rabbonin. Yeah, this is what the opinion of the majority of the rabbis are. The Rabbi Shimon, but not Rabbi Shimon, because if we... What is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon? Omar, he said, Ein zechus teilo b'mayim hamorim. He says that there is no such thing as the merit of a woman suspending the action or the reaction, if you wish, of the mayim hamorim. You understand? In other words, he's convinced that, you know, it should take effect immediately, and there is no such thing as, you know, extenuating circumstance, so to speak. Omer Rav Chisna, so Rav Chisna said, Homani, so who is the authority then who says that Zechus definitely has effect? He says, Rabbi Akiva. Of course, before they said it was Rabbonin, right? But now they want to single out a particular authority. So they say, this has to be the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Omer, because he said, Makriv es minchaso, the Kohen has to offer up her mincha, the Yachakach, Mashka, and after that, he causes her to drink, right? This is all in accordance with Rabbi Shimon's opinion, right? It's exactly the same procedure. But what? But when it came to the question of merit, which can suspend the reaction, there he agreed with the rabbis that it does take effect. So there he differs from Rabbi Shimon. Then the Mishnah said, you know, after she shows all these ill effects over there, that she looks like she's ready to collapse on the spot, so take a look at the previous page, right? The Heim Omrim, in other words, the people who are there, say, Hotzi Yuho, Shalot Tabe Hazor, take her out so that she does not defile the temple court. So the question that they want to know is, what is the possibility of defilement over here? So he says, my Tama, what is the reason? So he says, the Dilmor Mesa. You say that perhaps, you know, she'll die on the spot. And in other words, the fact that they have a corpse over there in the Beis HaMikdash, you know, caused the whole Beis HaMikdash and caused the whole sanctuary, so to speak, to become defiled, right? So they say, Lememra, then, do you mean to say, the mace also of a machne leviyah, that a dead body is prohibited in the machne leviyah? Now, I explained this last week, because when we had the Mishnah at that time, so I spoke about it, but let me just refresh your memory again. When the people of Israel traveled through the wilderness, okay? So remember, you had the Machta Yisrael, in other words, all the tribes of Israel, and you know, you had tribes here, there, there, right? Three in each direction, and so on and so forth. And then in the middle, what did we have? We had, first of all, Leviyim, that's called the Machta Leviyah, and then you had the Kohanim together with the Aron, and that's called Machta Shekhinah. Okay? So, the various things that were prohibited. Okay, obviously, first of all, in the Machne Shekhinah, only a Kohen could enter over there. You could not have even a Levi over there, and certainly you could not have a Yisrael, because it is written, Vizor HaKorev, you must, that if there's anyone who is not a Kohen, Zor means literally a stranger, but it means anyone not a Kohen in this context, right? If he approaches, then he will die. It doesn't mean that he'll be put to death by a court, but what it means is that he'll have Misa B'dei Shemayim, okay? So there, obviously, since it was the holiest area within it, so nobody who had any degree of tumor was permitted. But what about in the next section, which was the Machne Leviya? In the Machne Leviya, we find who was over there, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Leviyim. Because who was Moshe Rabbeinu? Besides being Moshe Rabbeinu, he was also a Levi. And yet, what had he taken from Egypt? He had taken the Atzmos Yosef, which he kept watch over. So, obviously, as a normal rule, what do we say? We say that a mess is metame, right? In other words, it causes uncleanliness. Of course, when I talk about uncleanliness, I don't mean that you have dirty hands, but I mean, you know, that you're not allowed to eat of any of the sacred things, right? And then, in Machne Yisrael, of course, anybody would be permitted, with the exception of whom? The exception, of course, being Mitzrayim. People were suffering leprosy, so they had to be outside with the Machne Yisrael. Why? Because it's written, you know, v'chus l'machaneh, that they have to go outside of the camp. Okay. But apart from that, if a person had become defiled through a mess, by contact with a mess, then in that case he would still be permitted, as in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the Machne Leviya. Now, when they transferred this concept to the Beis HaMikdash, so obviously one area, the area where you had, you know, not just the, obviously where the Kodesh Kodoshim was, that only one person was permitted to enter it, right? Kohen Gadol. And then only on one occasion, on Yom Kippur, that's it. But then you had the area over there where you had the Mizbeach, and you had, you know, other things like the Shulchan and so on. Okay, so the Mizbeach HaKtoris, you know, the altar upon which the incense was offered. All right, there again, who was permitted over there? Only a Kohen. Okay. So that's still the area for the Kohanim. Move a little bit further on, and you have, let's say, the Duchan, where the Leviim sang, and so on. So that already would correspond to the Machne Leviya. And where was the Duchan? The Duchan was in the, in the Azorah, the main Azorah, the main courtyard, okay? Leading from the holiest, then you had a series of steps and gates and so on, which led to the Ezras Noshim, to the courtyard where the women were permitted to be, okay? And then, of course, you had areas, and of course, on the sides, you had all kinds of chambers for various purposes, including one chamber where the Sanhedrin sat, but also for a chamber where, let's say, that they kept the sacred vestments that were used, the begodim, right, the big day kahuna, other chambers where they had, let's say, the fire, the wood that they were going to use for the altar and things like that. They had all kinds of places, other place where the Kohen Gadol himself lived on the premises and things like that. Okay, so and then you had the area outside the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, outside the inner wall, where it no longer had any sanctity over there. And then, of course, you know, there was a wall that surrounded the entire area over there to separate it from all the other structures that you had on the Har HaBayis. But the point that I'm making is that you had various areas within it, each with its own specific type of Kedusha that it had. Yeah, that was an outer wall, obviously. Yeah, it was an outer wall. And yet it's sacred because why? Because the holiest part of the sanctuary was in the west. You came in through the east, okay, of course you could come in the other gates too, but if you came in through the east, okay, you would be facing the Mizbeach, and then you would also be facing the area, you know, which had the menorah and the Shulchan, and then you had the Kodshei Kodoshim was in the west, okay? So that's the reason why the western wall particularly was considered the most sacred of them all. Yes? Well, okay, well, as far as the paraduma, I mean, this would whoever actually contacted, okay? Person who handled the mess, he would require it, okay? But not, for example, people necessarily standing around because there was no roof over there. If it happened in an area where there's a roof, that's already a different story. That is called an ohel, literally a tent, right? But it means that, you know, it's a roofed area so that you're within the chamber with the nes, so that in that case then you have the tumah of the nes is transferred to you. Or to any kalim that are in there, unless the kalim are covered up, and you know, so that the tumah can't go inside. Well, they didn't have to choose a day upon which it was raining.
They had to count 7 days.
Huh?
They had to count 7 days. So, on the seventh day, whichever kind of day is, you have to do it.
Yeah, but listen, if you know the weather in Yerushalayim, most of the time you don't have too much rain, okay? Most of the time it doesn't rain. Of course, if Marty goes there.
The rainy season, Joseph.
Right. It's the rainy season, but it doesn't mean every day it rains. Doesn't happen that way. Okay. All right. Anyway, let's not get aside too much over here. All right. So, as I said, right, we have this tradition, Matanya, that the May Mace, Mutal, the Konis, the Machne Levia, that somebody who has come in contact with dead, right? In other words, he's become Tomei through contact with the dead. He is permitted to enter the Machne Levia, which would mean in this case in the Azora, right? The Lo Tamei Meis Bilvad, and not only somebody who came in contact with the dead are we talking about, Omru, did they say that? Ela Afilo Meis Atzmo, but even the dead person itself. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayikach Moshe, Es Atzmo Es Yosef Imo, right, that Moshe took the bones of Joseph together with him. And Imo means B'chisaso, means with him, means literally together with him in the same confined area, so to speak, right? So Omar Abaye, so Abaye said, no, that's not the reason then. They weren't afraid that she would die on the spot, because that wasn't it. But there might be another problem. Shema Tifros Nidon. Maybe that she would have suddenly her period. Lememra, are we to say the Be'uso Marpe, that a sudden fright, which is what Be'uso means over here, that a sudden fright causes literally a loosening, in other words, that the, you know, the system suddenly reacts, that the woman's system suddenly reacts by you know, by beginning to menstruate? He says, in, yes, Dipsiv, it's written. And this, of course, is a Megillah Esther. It's written over there, "Vatischalchal habalka miyot," which means that the queen trembled greatly. Of course, when did she tremble greatly? When she heard the news that the Jews were all going to be slaughtered, right? And Mordechai sent her this letter, and, you know, he pleaded with her that she had to go and save her people. So when she heard the bad news about the edict to destroy the Jews, so it's written, "Vatischalchal habalka miyot," which means that she trembled very greatly. Okay, the Yom HaRav, and Rav said, what does it mean? It means she pierced her needed. She had suddenly the onset of the menstrual flow. So he says, but haven't we learned a different tradition which says what? Charodo misalek is domim, which means that fear can cause that she doesn't have, you know, her normal flow, okay? So he says, Pachta Tzamis, yes. An ordinary fear could cause her, you know, to lose her period. She doesn't have, you know. After all, we know, I mean, not every woman is as regular as clockwork, right? And sometimes it happens, you know, that there are various circumstances under which a woman is not going to have her normal period. But the Yisusa, a sudden fright, Marpe can cause it to happen, so that therefore they were afraid that this would happen, and that's the reason why they tried to remove her from the Beis HaMikdash as soon as she started to turn green and gel and everything else, so the, you know, with all her arteries.
It's obvious from this that so, a right. Menstruating woman would never be undergoing this process during menstruation.
Yeah, you mean if she were a sota, right, this would be the wrong time for it to come. Right, correct, yeah. Okay, then the question about Zchus. Says, yes, yes. No, it's not time related. No, obviously, when you have to go through a Beis Din and another Beis Din, and you have to travel to Yerushalayim and everything else and so on, this is not connected with any particular time frame. Okay? Yesh lo zchus, if she has merit, then what? So the Mishnah says. Yesh lo zchus, and hoyisa toila. Then in that case, right, the immediate effects were suspended. And the Mishnah continues, says, Yesh zchus toila shana achas. It could be suspended because of a merit for a year. Yesh chus toila beishanim, it could be 2 years, right? Yesh chus toila gimel shanim, it might be suspended for 3 years, right? Okay, could happen. So this is what they're now going to discuss, that part of the Mishnah. Okay, says Mani, whose opinion is this? So he says, Man Tznisan, the Mishnah, he says, Lo Abba Yossi ben Chanan. It doesn't follow the opinion of Abba Yossi ben Chanan. The Lo Abba Eliezer ben Yitzchok, nor does it follow Rabbi Eliezer ben Yitzchok's opinion. Ish Kfar Dorom, who came from Kfar Dorom. The Lo Rabbi Yishmael, nor does it follow Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. The Tanya, when we learned, Im Yesh Lo Zechus, Toilo Lo Shlosh Chadoshim, according to Rabbi Yishmael, what? If she has merit, then the fact that even if she was guilty, but if she has merit, so it's not going to be obvious for 3 months. Why not for 3 months? So the answer is kedei hakorasa ubor, divi Rabbi Abba Yossi Bar Chanan. Okay, his opinion is that it's going to there's a 3 month suspension period, because if she's innocent, then what's going to happen? She's going to become pregnant and have a child. But how do we know that she's pregnant? You have to give her 3 months in order to be able to see whether she's pregnant or not. So then we'll know whether she is innocent or not. This is the opinion of Rabbi Abba Yossi Bar Chanan. How about Rabbi Eliezer ben Yitzchak, Ish Kfar Dorom, who came from Kfar Dorom? He says, Omer Tisha Chadoshim. He says that the schus, it lasts for 9 months. Shenemar, as it is written, v'nikasov, she's innocent, v'nizra zora, then she's going to have a child. Now, obviously, it's not just a question, according to him, of seeing whether she's pregnant or not, but you have to see whether she's going to have a child who would be viable, okay? A living child. Not only that, he says, v'lahalon, afterwards, hu omer, doesn't mean immediately in the same passage over there, but it means, and we find furthermore, that in Tillim it says, Zera Yavdenu, that seed will serve him, in other words, children will serve him, Yisupar, it says the Supar D'Acharon, okay, so who is going to serve God and, tell about God's great miracles? Zera Haraui L'Sapir, this is a child who is worthy of the praising God. In other words, a child who comes from a woman who was never guilty, she was an innocent woman, and she's a kosher woman. So such a child is going to be a kosher child and worthy enough to praise God. Rabbi Yishmael, how about him? Omer Shneim Osachon, she says 12 months. The Yafal Pishen Ra'ayel Adoba, and even though we have no place in the Torah where specifically it mentions 12 months, does it? But Zecher Adovei says there is like a hint to this idea of a month. Dichsiv, where does the hint come from? The hint comes from the book of Daniel. It's written over there, because remember in the book of Daniel, the various chapters, beginning of the book, after you read the introductory statement, how Daniel and his companions were taken captive among those who were brought to Babylonia, and then they were brought before Nebuchadnezzar, right, and he decided to you know, they showed so much promise that he wanted them to grow up in the royal court and so on and so forth. Okay? So then Nebuchadnezzar subsequently has dreams, right? He doesn't know how to interpret his dreams. So Daniel comes to the rescue. He interprets. So what does he say to Nebuchadnezzar? He said, Lahain Malka, therefore, O king, he says, Malchi Yishbar Alayach, let my idea, let my suggestion be pleasing unto you. The Chitech Bitzdoko, and he says, the Chitech, or the Chatech, meaning, you know, your sins, Bitzdoko Peruk, redeem by performing acts of Tzedoka, the Adisoch, the Mechon in Anion, and also, you know, Adisoch is like the word Avod in Hebrew. In other words, the presumptuous sins that you have committed, may they be expiated or atoned for by showing favor to the poor people. Hein teve arkol ishlusech. And in this way, your kingdom will be prolonged. And then right after that, we find that Kolamota al Nebuchadnezzar Malka, that Kolamota al Nebuchadnezzar, all these things happened to Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, he did perform these acts of charity and helping the poor and performing righteousness. And then it's written, Liktas Yarchin, Treyasar, right? And at the end of 12 months, so in other words, all these things happened that God permitted his kingdom to continue. So what do we see? We see that he is a heathen king, right? Nevertheless, by performing acts of tzedakah, in other words, he also built up zechus, he built up merit, and there the 12 months are mentioned. So this is why Rabbi Yishmael says that even though Torah doesn't say anything over here in the case of the Sota, but nevertheless we have a hint that Zechus can can prolong, you know, let us avert punishment for a year's time. Okay. La'olam, so he says, in truth, right, Rabbi Yishmael, yes, it's the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, the Yashkach Kro, and he found the Pasuk. The Omar, and he said, Utani, and he learned as follows, Ditziv, there's a Pasuk in the book of Amos. Actually, there's several Pasukim, because if you read the book of Amos, you'll see that he starts in by talking about Shlosha Pishay Edom, Shlosha Pidei this one, and that one, and everything else, and so forth, until finally, of course, he hits who? He hits home with Shlosha Pishay Yisrael, and then Shlosha Pishay Yehuda. Okay? So, he eventually gets around. But the pasuk that they're quoting over here is the first one that we have over there. Komar Hashem, right? Let's say, Lord, our Shlosha Pishay Edom, right? The three sins, right? And it's written over there, the Al Arba O Lo Ashivedo. Okay, this is the pasuk as it's written in the book of Amos, which means, I will forgive, let's say, the first sin, I will forgive the second sin, I'll forgive the third sin. But the fourth sin already I will not. So in other words, from this he derives what? It should be a year, but it might be 2 years, it might be 3 years. You see, this is the idea, right? Umay apal pishen ra'ayul adover, zechul adover, and so therefore how does he explain the idea that even though we don't have definite proof for this matter, but still there's a hint to it. So this is how he derived it over there. So the Gemara is not altogether happy with that. It says, Dilma Shani of the Kechavit. Maybe in the case of idolatrous nations, the Rebbeinu Shalom gives him a little bit of time. Why? Delay Mafkid Dina Laihu, because he doesn't immediately punish them for what they're doing. But what would the implication be? The implication, if we take it in this sense, would be, but when it comes to Eden, the Rebbeinu Shalom is a little bit more strict with us. Well, as we see, nevertheless, but what the Mishnah says, you know, that it doesn't necessarily happen because there is zechus, and that's the reason why we should encourage the performance of tzedakah, we should encourage the tzedakah of chesed, and all these things, and of course, and then, you know, the study of Torah. Okay? Yeah, I know what you're thinking about what it says to Abraham and Bispin Absorb, that, you know, the people of Israel would suffer in Egypt and so on, but it's only the Doravi, Yeshua Hena, it's only the fourth generation that would leave Egypt and come back to Eretz Israel.
But this is only delaying in time. This is not ordering the final severity.
No.
That is, the woman would ultimately then go through all these symptoms.
Possibly. Possibly. Correct. But nevertheless, in other words, the idea being that if she did sin, eventually punishment would come to her. But it did not mean that necessarily it had to come immediately, because there were other circumstances which could, you know, extenuate the severity of the punishment.
So they couldn't immediately decide right after she drank the water whether she had been guilty.
Correct. 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 Right. But obviously, if she became pregnant, then that would be a good sign, okay?
Did you say,
yeah,
did you say that at the end of the Amos it says, Ashlosha
Pishei Yehuda? Actually, it starts first with Ashlosha Pishei Yehuda, then after Ashlosha Pishei Yisrael, the Allah Rabbah Yehoshi Benam, yeah.
So then, how is the
Yehuda? I agree. It's not a. I added it. The Gemara didn't consider it, so. So that's why I'm not 100% sure, you know, that this is any kind of a proof. He doesn't say that I have 100% proof. He says, I don't have ra'aya. You know, I don't have ra'aya, you know, means that you have definite proof, you know. He says, it's only a zechel adavet. So it's a nice drash. That's about all I can say. Okay. But the important thing is, again, it's zechus teila. We have to do those things. And, you know, it applies to us in general. I mean, maybe Rabbeinu Shalom should punish us for bad things that we do, but he gives us a chance, and if we do the right thing, so he gives us more of a chance in the Zaygetus and so on. Okay. Alright, I think we'll stop at this point tonight. My voice is just about out, and so Mirza Shem, next week we'll go back to a Wednesday session. Okay. And have a happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, we have no place
to go.
Right. To go to New York, not in the mood to schlep over there. I'm a little too tired right now, and so is Anne. And, you know, my kid...